Welcome to From an Enfield Poet with me, Anthony Fisher. There will be a series of podcasts on poets, poetry, history and industry, most of which will have a connection with Enfield. All interesting topics for me that I hope will be of interest to you.
Enfield Industries podcast is supported by the Arts Council Place Partnership Initiative and administered by Enfield Council.
Tales of Enfield Industry looks at the manufacturing industry that grew up in Enfield. I'm Anthony Fisher and I've been making cleaning chemicals in Brimsdown since 1964. Join me for this four-part podcast series, hearing from people who have worked in the companies that grew up in the Enfield area.
In episode two, we hear anecdotes, stories, and clips of poetry from my grandfather, Anthony Fisher. Chemist, industrialist, poet, and entrepreneur, he tells us about his passion for Brimsdown, his company, and the people he worked with. I'm Holly Darville. Join me on this very personal family journey.
An Anthony Fisher production, engineered by Maroon Community Media, celebrating Enfield's Festival of Industry.
From childhood, man is attracted by moving objects that are automatically controlled. He is inherently lazy, but he is also mechanically minded. That's why he is always inventing things to do his work and ease his own burden.
The proximity of water, rail and power brought manufacturing to Brimsdown by the early 20th century. Our family story and connection with the area begins post-World War II, with my great-granddad, Clive Fisher, being demobbed, as Anthony, my granddad, explains.
Well, when he was demobbed in 1946, he got a job in a company, I think at that time it was called International Corrodeless Limited. They were an electroplating company that had been doing essential war work for the military in Brimsdown, and the bank had lent them a lot of money. I think it's about £35,000 or £40,000, which is several million pounds now by today's standards. And it turns out that they weren't as honest as they might have been, and the money went into their pockets instead of into the company. But as they were doing valuable war work, electroplating, for instance, the stub axles of army lorries, so that they didn't rust, the bank allowed them to continue. And my father got the job with International Corrodeless because my grandfather, who was at that time was bank manager in Gants Hill, I think it was, said to the company he won't withdraw the loan as long as he could have, in his words, his man in the company. So he got my father the job to keep an eye on things, to try and get things back onto the straight and narrow. But in truth, that loan never went away until almost towards the end of the company, which had come later. So it crippled the company, that loan, in many respects.
At an early age, my granddad started visiting Brimsdown. It was a journey that shaped his life.
I just started going down there when I was six-ish, down to Brimsdown. And the original plant was in Lockfield Avenue, in the old wartime fire station. And the company was based there when he went there in 1946. In fact, they had premises there, one in Bilton Way, where the current factory is. They also had premises, the platform in the Turkish Street station, because during the war the train stopped running. Presumably because they were doing war work, they were able to rent the platform from British Rail for their business. And I recently read the minutes, and the board were getting very angry because after the war, the British Railway refused to renew the lease. But of course, they wanted to start the trains running again.
Britain's greatest shortage today is coal. The Ministry of Fuel and Power looked round for ways of saving it. They found one way on the railways. A great deal could be saved there.
Yes, fortunately for me, my father needed a chemist, a quality control chemist. His electroplating company had started making chemicals for a cleaning group, Office Cleaning Services Limited, and my father had started a company to make, first of all, floor seal called Glitzer. That led to him making simple chemicals for OCS, because they were being, in their words, ripped off by their suppliers, and he was able to make more competitive products. And I can remember working in our kitchen with him, developing the products, you know, doing the right mixes, getting it right for them. Somehow or other, OCS, through their contacts, were able to arrange the father's company, which was called Amel Chemicals Limited, to distribute aviation products made in California by an American company who specialised in aviation chemicals. And the job of the company was just to receive the chemicals from America, stock them, and then deliver them around the world. The father's job was to get the orders delivered to around the place, and they ended up going to Pakistan, Europe, Iceland, Africa. But then at some stage, in a remarkable act of faith on the Americans' part, the company was asked to manufacture some of the simpler products. And for that, they needed a quality control chemist. So my father took the opportunity to give me a job, which was great. And he didn't have to pay me much, which was great from his point of view. And I started at Enfield Technical College on an ONC chemistry course. And I went ONC, HNC, LRIC, and now I'm an FRSC, a Fellow of the Royal College of Chemistry, Royal Society of Chemistry.
Electroplating is the process of plating one metal onto another. Anthony's enthusiasm for the process and the people can best be heard in his poem, entitled Elegy to Brimstone.
Electroplating bewitched me. Iron, ugly shapes made beautiful with galvanize, transformed with bright copper, shining nickel, vivified with chromium in poisonous fats. The platers had hard hands, nimble fingers that could wrap and knot copper wire around thumb-thick cathode bars. Wires laden with shaped and turned brass, hanging as the tentacles of jellyfish, drifting in warm and exotic oceans. The plating shop floor flowed with water from weir rinses, had tanks bursting with black art. The nickel vat, a hot liquid emerald that bubbled with air agitation. Yeah, I think in the poem I said iron ugly shapes, and they come in rusty, greasy, dirty, and you can't really see the shape of them because it's hidden by the dirt and the grime, and they go into a degreaser, a hot caustic degreaser, so grease comes off. It goes, if it's steel, it goes into acid to get the iron off, rust off rather. And then it could be zinc plated or cadmium plated or even nickel and chrome. And once it's cleaned and plated, it's bright and shiny. You can actually see its shape. And very often the shapes themselves were just beautiful. And the whole process is like magic, absolutely like magic.
Bill would hang by one hand from pipes trailing across the roof, tighten joints with Stilsons in the other. He'd wire brush his hands in hot caustic cleaner, then rinse in acid pickle. They were like leather. For fun, he'd eat a bolt in an intense blue flame, hold it out for inspection, and of course, burnt fingers.
Bill was there were three brothers, Barnard brothers. Bill was one of them, the eldest, and he was tough as old boots, really tough. At the end of the day, he'd put his hand in hot caustic cleaner, scrub it with a wire brush, neutralise it in the hydrochloric acid tank, and then rinse it with water. And he and his brother Albert used to go to the fairs, which I think in off Chingford Hill somewhere, and they used to go to the boxing booth, where they both would challenge the boxer, and both of them would win, and obviously they got cash for that. But my father used to tell me that just after the war, when the plating shop was making and selling equipment, Bill used to, when they were installing plating equipment, he'd hang from the pipes in the ceiling with one hand while he tightened up the joints with Stilson's in the other. He once walked, got a mouthful of cyanide, and he walked from the plating shop about 50 yards to a tap, spat it out, rinsed his mouth, spat it out, and then went back to work again.
This was David's bath. He created beauty by day, brilliant nickel on the flowing shaped mouthpieces for French horn, trombone, then a flash of glittering gold. At night it was him that shone. He would become a peacock with black cloak and butterfly brooch. How I miss air laden with heavy sweetness of zinc brightener, grey-white jelly spooned out by Guess. I would embrace the hot blood smell of cyanide spiced with steam, excited with hydrochloric acid. Hold still, listened for the sound of hydrogen fizzing and crackling at cathodes. It was the reek of alchemy.
He was a fabulous boy, he really was. He highly intelligent and creative. He had lots of jobs in the company, but he ended up being in charge of the gold plating. And he had this lovely bright nickel vat, which was a beautiful emerald colour, and it used to have air agitation, so it's bubbling away, these beautiful colours. And he was the one that plated the brass mouthpieces. He used to put copper on it, then bright nickel, then give them a covering of gold, and they looked absolutely wonderful. And he, again, had hands like leather, used to polish things so they looked wonderful. But at night he used to go up to the West End with his cloak and his butterfly brooch and pick up men and have a good time and be back at work the next day. The company, as it happened, employed quite a few gay people because the managing director was gay himself. A very accepting environment. Considering everyone was weird, no one took advantage of that, no one really bullied. There was a total acceptance of working together, accepting each other's differences. It was a really nice environment. The period I'm talking about is 60s, 70s. People who work in an electroplating have to be weird. There's no other way of putting it. A normal person would not work in an electroplating shop. Because, for instance, we had 4,000 litres of cyanide solution standing next to 1,000 litres of hydrochloric acid. That's what Hitler used to make gas for the gas chambers. When they mix together, you get cyanide gas off. Water's running all over the floor all the time. The hands of the platers get like leather. It's a mix of danger, dirty, it's noisy. In a way, the plating shop is like a person that you're relating to. It's living. It's really quite an extraordinary thing. But ordinary people would not put up with it. They just wouldn't. But those that do love it and wouldn't do anything else.
This enthusiasm for electroplating is best expressed when he talks about mouthpieces for musical instruments.
Well, we used to gold plate Dennis Wick mouthpieces. He was a famous wind instrument performer, very famous, and he designed this beautiful range of mouthpieces for trumpets, trombones, everything. And in themselves, their shapes were beautiful. They were made of a heavily leaded brass, so they're very satisfyingly heavy in their hand, and we used to silver plate or gold plate them, and they were just beautiful, absolutely beautiful. Real craftsmen, you know, to gauge just how many to put on a jig and everything. It's just a craftsman. It's a black art, black art.
Bring harmony. Where there is error, may we bring truth. Where there is doubt, may we bring faith. And where there is despair, may we bring hope.
By the 1980s, there was a dramatic change for Britain's industrial sector, which Brimsdown was going to feel the full effect, including the end of the era for the plating shop and other industries.
And of course, after the 80s and Mrs. Thatcher, What was a thriving engineering industry in Enfield just went. So our customers went. Middlesex University shut down. It was Enfield Tech changed into Middlesex Polytechnic and then Middlesex University. I think when it was Middlesex Polytechnic, it shut the engineering department. And that meant that local companies didn't have access to trained engineers, local trained engineers. And so the 28,000 jobs went out of Brimsdown, and a huge number of them were the Robouse customers. So the customers went, and in 2003 we had to shut it. By that time, the original shareholder, the works director, wanted out, so I bought him out, and a colleague helped, so we became, the shareholding changed. But we couldn't make it work. The plating shop was shut down, tried to make the paint shop go, but in 2003 we had to shut it. You know, but it was really struggling, A, because of the lack of investment in the new, highly needed environmental and health and safety rules came to effect. The end. The company had to close. Outmoded, archaic, difficult. There is no place for it today.
My grandfather looks back fondly in his early days as a chemist in Brimsdown. However, more importantly, the education he received and his worldly and open-mindedness lays the foundation to his successful chemical business today.
And during that time, I was exposed to more and more exotic, more and more raw materials. And so I was taught, exposed to these raw materials. I was taught the importance of intelligent formulating. I was taught the importance of good customer service. And I was taught the importance and the systems for good quality control, and I was taught what you need to do technical service jobs in laboratory equipment to carry out cleaning tests, etc. So it was an immensely helpful education which I still use today. Brimsdown. My only way home was across the line that ran to the city of gentlemen and money. I remember 1,000 bicycles eddying around me, held back by gates as heavy and slow as the locks of the Lee. One rider was a catcher. I had watched him as he stood by a low steel barrier, holding long and unwieldy tongs.
An Anthony Fisher production, engineered by Maroon Community Media, celebrating Enfield's Festival of Industry. Enfield Industries podcast is supported by the Arts Council Place Partnership Initiative and administered by Enfield Council.
That's all from this episode of From an Enfield Poet. Thank you for listening, and I hope that you'll join me for the next episode.